Good afternoon. Would you please state your full name and spell your full name?
Yes, Brent W. Marchant. M-A-R-C-H-A-N-T.
On April 1st of 2008, were you employed as a part-time investigator for the Office of the Medical Examiner?
Yes.
As of that date, how long have you been doing that job as a part-time medical examiner investigator?
Approximately 25 years.
And tell us briefly what duties are involved in that position as an investigator for the medical examiner.
Basically, we do scene investigation for cause and manner of death on homicides, suicides, various crashes, accidents, undetermined deaths. Write information for pathologists and photograph, collect some evidence, maintain integrity of the bodies and victims so that they're properly secured for their investigation.
How does your investigation dovetail with what law enforcement would be doing as far as crime scene, or maybe the state crime lab doing crime scene?
Well, we work right in concert with law enforcement and crime lab all the time with proper evidence handling and interpretation of the crime scenes, what exactly went on and when it occurred.
Would it be accurate to say that your responsibility is primarily the victim of the homicide?
Yes.
But also to document the surrounding scene and the circumstances in which the victim was found?
Yes.
As of April 1st of 2008, were you also working in other capacities in law enforcement?
I was a peace officer at that time.
And what agency have you been working for as a peace officer?
At the University of Utah. I have since retired after 37 years.
So you have 37 years with the University of Utah?
Yes.
As to the information that you gather as a medical examiner investigator, where does that information go and how is it used?
Well, it goes to the state medical examiner's office where the pathologist assigned to the daily cases reviews the information, decides whether or not an autopsy is necessary, and oftentimes they review the photographs as well. And it goes to that point and then is stored there also.
Is one of the purposes of sharing that information to assist the pathologist, the actual physician who's doing the investigation, to make their determination as to what caused the person's death and the manner of death?
Yes.
Tell us specifically the types of training that you received in your job as the medical examiner, just broadly in general.
In general, Bachelor of Science in Psychology. I had extensive training with University of Texas, Texas A&M at Dallas, and University of New Mexico at Albuquerque on homicide, sexual homicide, serial killers, all methods of homicide, gunshots, edged weapons, strangulation, blunt trauma. Training in all of the conveyances of people that result in death, from airline to skateboards, and injury patterns associated with those.
What about training related to the preservation of evidence at a death scene?
Training with evidence is important. marking what evidence is, and then protecting it from the same to the morgue.
As a medical examiner investigator, you get involved in the actual transport process where the victim's body is transported.
Sometimes.
Explain that process.
Okay. Generally, we have a transport company that we work with and secure the body and associated evidence in a body bag. And then we see it, turn it over to the transport, and it is immediately taken to the morgue.
So you don't actually do the transport, but by the time the body is transported, all the evidence that's related to your investigation and the body is sealed and transported.
Yes.
On April 1st of 2008, were you called to the scene where a little girl named Surinamu had been found?
I was at about 8:30 p.m.
Who actually called you and asked you to respond?
I believe it was Sergeant Mike Borsman.
What did you do after you received that?
I went to the command post at the location and waited to be instructed what to do as far as when I could enter the scene.
And was that instruction given by the police?
At that time, I was instructed that it was going to be some time. They were still processing the scene, and I could go ahead and leave. They'd call me direct when they were ready for me.
So they first called you, but then realized that it may take some time to do the crime scene processing.
A few hours.
Is that how it usually works at the scene of a death?
Not necessarily, but sometimes.
At 8:30 when you went there, did you go to the apartment where the body was found?
No.
And you didn't go inside that apartment?
No.
So then, what happened during the night after you left?
Yes, I continued on with other duties, but I was contacted again by Sergeant Worsland of South Salt Lake Police.
I apologize, but we need to just go a little slower. We're missing some of this.
Okay, if you could speak a little more slower. Thank you.
Let me ask the question again. We'll go back to that. And maybe I missed a step too, and that is, you were there waiting to be told you could enter the scene. And then at some point you left. What time did you leave?
I'm not sure. It was in the neighborhood of midnight.
So possibly into the early morning hours of midnight.
Yes.
And who told you that you could leave at that?
Sergeant Worsman.
Sergeant Worsman. So what was your next contact related to this particular event?
5 o'clock. The morning of April 2nd, Sergeant Worsland called me, told me to return.
What happened after that?
I got there about 5:30.
What did you do after you arrived?
I went with the police, did a walkthrough through the scene. We entered the apartment.
So you were escorted?
Yes.
Was it Sergeant Worsland or someone else?
If I recall, he and Byington.
Detective Byington.
Detective Byington.
Tell us about that as you entered the scene. What did you notice?
Well, the first thing I do is photograph. And a general overview of the scene, visually. And it was apparent that there had been a violent struggle.
What basis would you have for saying that?
Well, there was two locations of considerable amount of blood on the carpet and blood splatter on the wall.
As you were photographing those things, were you careful not to come in contact with any of that blood?
Oh, sure.
And is that something you've been trained to be careful about?
Yeah.
What else did you see as you photographed just that area of the apartment?
I saw the decedent's shoes. Strange location. One was tossed by the toilet, and the other one was inside the commode.
Were they the same type of shoe?
Yes.
Did they appear to be a pair of shoes?
Yes.
And as you entered the bathroom, what else did you see?
Well, in the bathroom, it was immediately apparent there was a little girl dead in the shower.
What is the lighting like?
Well, it was bright. The lights were on.
Did you take photographs?
I did.
And I'm going to show you now what's been previously admitted as States Exhibit Number 72. And just ask if this is the view that you had or what you saw that morning.
Yes.
Is this the position that the child's body was in that morning?
Yes.
And what did you note as a death investigator that was significant to you?
Well, she was, she'd been through quite a struggle, an obvious fracture.
If you could maybe move your chair just a little bit that way, then we'll pick up what you're saying on the microphone. Thank you.
She appeared to be the recipient of a violent assault. There was an obvious fracture to her left forearm. It was contorted. You could see it partially here.
There is a laser pointer in front of you if you need to use it.
Thank you. Right there.
Okay. What else was significant to you?
The placement. I'm carrying the escarpment of her body in the base of the shower. And she was still wet. It was fairly cold in there anyway, but she was wet from what seemed to be being washed, trying to.
When you say she was wet, was it her body that was wet or the clothing?
Clothing underneath the. It's hard to see it here, but this jacket is fairly thick. And then underneath it was another article of clothing, and they were wet, so they had a considerable amount of water put on them, and her hair was wet.
Did you determine that by touching?
Yes.
Had the body been moved from this position prior to the time that you got there?
According to lividity and rigor mortis, no, it had not been.
And were you the first person who responded, who had the authority, the legal authority, to actually move the body?
Yes.
So the police didn't have that authority?
No.
tell us what else, if there was anything else that was significant to you as you just doing your initial look at the body.
She was nude from the waist down. That tiny skirt is disheveled and pulled around her waist. As I said, lividity was set. And that requires 12 hours for lividity to set, and it was completely set. Rigor mortis was...
Before you move on, we need to explain what lividity is.
Oh, excuse me. Lividity is the pooling of blood. So after death, gravity will pull the blood. The blood will settle in dependent areas, and approximately 12 hours it will set there, and it will then it won't be moved. Between that time, I can go in, which I did, and I apply a pressure point, say on the leg where there's blood, and if it blanches, it's an indication that it has not set. But it did not blanch at all. So lividity, the blood had pooled and it had set.
And then you were going to tell us about rigor mortis. Tell us what that is, first of all, and what you identified.
Okay. Rigor mortis is concerned with the muscles. And after death, they stiffen. Generally starts with the small muscles, the jaw muscles first, facial muscles, the neck, and then phalanges. And the last muscles to stiffen are the large muscles of the leg and torso.
And just before you go on again, what are phalanges?
Oh, the fingers. The finger muscles.
Thank you.
Okay, so I checked her rigor mortis and it was hard and set. And it generally becomes hard and set after 18 hours, approximately, in this kind of temperature.
What was the ambient temperature, without telling us exactly, but just generally speaking, what did you notice?
Approximately, it was pretty cool, around 60.
And did you actually touch her body?
Yes.
What was her body temperature just by touch?
It was cold.
Was it your understanding that paramedics had been there at 7:30 the night before? And had actually pronounced her dead at that
point. I knew they had been there. I wasn't sure what time.
But did you understand that they had been there and not done any kind of life-saving measures?
Yes.
At the time that you did your examination, was there any doubt that this little girl was deceased?
Oh, no, none whatsoever.
Just based on your experience over the years, what generally would be the amount of time that she would have had to be there to be in the condition you saw at 5:30 in the morning?
How much time?
Yeah. What's the minimum amount of time?
Well, the minimum amount of time would be clearly 18 to 20 hours and upwards of 36.
So up to 36 hours.
Yes.
Other than that and those things you talked about, was there anything else you could do to pin down the time that she actually expired?
I could have done a liver temperature, but declined due to the contamination of the copious amounts of cold water. She was cold.
Now, did you turn the body over, or did you supervise as other people turned the body over?
Before we did that, I secured her hands for trace evidence.
And tell us how you did it.
Well, I covered them both in a paper sack and secured the sack so that it protects trace evidence on the hands.
And tell us the process you go through to do that. How do you secure the hands?
Carefully put them over the entire hand up the arm a few inches and then tie them in place.
Anything else that you could do before turning the body over?
No.
What did you discover when you turned the body over?
There was a considerable amount of blood. And it was underneath her, and it was also saturated in her coat and on her face, in her hair.
Let me now show you what's been previously admitted as State's Exhibit 78. I'll just ask if this is what you saw without the placard with the number 29. Maybe it was there when you saw it. After you were done with your body.
That's basically it, yes.
Okay. Tell us what it was that's significant to you as you look at this.
Well, as I said initially, she was nude from the waist down, and it appeared to be underwear that was located under her face.
Is there any significance to the pattern of blood
here? Most of it was coming, that I could tell, most of it was coming from the head trauma.
And is there any indication that the blood itself has had water over it?
Oh, yes. It was diffused by water and appeared to have been washed, trying to get rid of it.
Did you have a chance to touch the underwear yourself as well?
I did not.
So you don't know whether it was wet?
I can't say.
Was that something that was transported with her body? Or
no.
Was it?
I believe the police collected it. I did not.
From the point that you described, what other things did you and those who were assisting you do to prepare her body for transport to the medical examiner's office?
We placed her in a plastic lining and a sheet. I placed her in a body bag and sealed it. Immediately she was transported.
Do you know when the autopsy was actually completed?
I know it was done that morning.
Do you know who did it?
I believe Dr. Todd Gray. Yeah.
Did you actually provide your information and your report in this case to Dr. Gray?
Yes.
Did you meet with him and talk with him verbally about your findings?
Yes, we talked.
And did he request you to do any further investigation of the crime scene itself?
No.
That's all I have.
So when you arrived at the scene at the request of Sergeant Worslin, did Dr. Todd Gray ever accompany you while you were looking at the body down in the shower?
I don't believe so. I don't recall him being there.
Your memory is that he was not there?
That's correct.
If I may approach the
Yes.
Did you fill out a two-page report of investigation in this case, Mr. Marshall?
Yes.
I'm going to show you a document to see if you can identify it on the record. It's a copy that I was provided by the prosecution. It's just the first two pages.
Okay.
Do you recognize that?
Yes.
What is it?
It's a face sheet for an investigation report. That
and what's the title of it at the top of the first page?
Office of the Medical Examiner, State of Utah, Report of Investigation. Gives a case number.
Is this something that you filled out and completed as part of your work?
Yes.
Look at the bottom left-hand portion where it indicates who was on scene during the investigation. We see initials BM in the bottom left-hand portion, right?
And Your Honor, I'll object to the nature of the question only in that it assumes facts that have not yet testified about in terms of the significance of what's on the document.
And the basis of the objection?
It assumes facts, not in evidence. In other words, counsel is assuming that the meaning of the part he wants to ask about without asking the witness what it means. That's a big
deal. I'll lay foundation for that.
Okay.
He's already testified he thought Dr. Gray was not there.
Correct.
And my concern is that the way Mr. Peterson asked the question, he assumed what it means that the information is on the document without asking the witness for the reason.
I think he just asked the witness. He only asked the witness if that was
what
it was.
All I'm asking is what does it mean?
Overruled to make it.
So as you look at the bottom left-hand portion of that report that you completed, there's a section that talks about who from the Office of the Medical Examiner was present during this investigation, right?
Yes.
You see the initials BM there?
Yes.
Who is that?
That's me.
You also see other initials besides yours?
Yes.
What initials?
PCG.
And who's that?
That's Dr. Todd Gray.
Let me approach you again. So your report indicates that Dr. Gray was present during this examination of the scene, right?
It does.
But your recollection is that he was not.
I don't remember. I don't recall.
There's a subsection on this report of investigation from Marchant where there are different categories that can be filled in. One such category, for example, is lividity. And you've already testified that lividity was fixed in this case. In other words, that blood settling by virtue of gravity had become fixed, right?
Yes.
And that the rigor, the stiffness, your indication on the report is that it was hard, consistent with your testimony. And below that, there's a space for a notation of body temperature. I'm assuming we're talking about the body temperature of the deceased individual, right?
Yes.
And it's left blank. I'm asking you to explain why that was left blank.
I didn't do a liver temperature, and her body was very cold. And the reason I didn't do a liver temperature was because of the water.
Tell us more about that.
Well, it would skew the results. The cold water. It was cold in there anyway. And the body temperature drops at a normal rate of about 1.5 degrees an hour for someone your size. A child would be faster. And little move. I don't know how much she weighed, but she was half nude and covered with water, cold water, so it would skew the liver temperature. But I did touch her and she was cold, very cold.
So in your opinion, taking the liver temperature would have been worthless at that point?
Would have been misleading.
Yes. There's also an area next to the body temperature where there's a category of ambient room temperature. That's also low. Did you make an attempt to take the room temperature?
I just recall it was uncomfortably cold.
Now, the measurement of a room temperature might be important for the medical examiner in determining the time of death.
In extremes, yes.
But in this case, you didn't feel it was necessary.
It wasn't extremely cold.
If I may approach one more time, Your Honor. There's a heading here, Mr. Marchand, about place of death. Do you see that?
Yes.
Under place of death, there are some letters, LSA. Tell the jury what that means.
That means last seen alive.
And what entries did you make under that heading?
14:15.
So military time.
2:15 p.m.
2:15 p.m. on what day?
March 31st.
Okay, so 2:15 afternoon of March 31st. How did you acquire that information to complete that report?
From the police, South Salt Lake Police.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
Did you, Mr. Marchand, take a wider array of photos of the shower?
I know, I mean, we've seen some photos of the shower in the base. I'm asking for their photos of the walls of the shower.
I took photos of outside the shower where you could see the total opening.
And did you notice when you were first there on scene and looking in the shower that the walls of the shower were still wet?
I can't remember.
Did you make any notation or do you have any memory that there was any leaking coming from the shower head itself?
I can't remember.
Was there some attempt during your investigation to get a medical history of someone?
No.
You didn't ask anyone?
No. I didn't see the point. She hadn't been here that long.
The first time you came to the scene, Sergeant Worsland had asked you to come sometime around 8:30 p.m. On the evening of April 1st, right?
On April 1st, yes.
And you arrived there. Did they keep you outside of the scene at that time?
Yes.
Or were you able to go in and take a quick look?
No.
You were kept out?
Yes.
So then you waited from 8:30 p.m. until about midnight or 12:30 in the morning on April 1st, and then went home.
No, I had other work to do. I did other cases. I left.
In any event, you left the scene.
Yes.
And then you were called back that morning of April 1st at 5:30 in the morning.
I was called at about 5 o'clock, and I returned up there at 5:20.
So when you were late, this 18-hour window relative to the rigor indicating a time of death, that would be 18 hours from 5:30 a.m. on the morning of April 1st.
Correct.
Did you notice, Mr. Marchand, any particular odor when you were down there in that bathroom?
There's... No.
So
sometimes associated with a death, there will be an odor that's emitted from the body at some point.
Oftentimes.
In this case, you didn't notice that.
Nothing out of the ordinary.
I think that's all. Thomas?
No questions.